لا نصر الله، لا نصر الله،
ممنون. تفضلوا تفضلوا. ممنون. إلى شهدائنا صناع النصر والتحرير والكرامة، نهدي إلى أرواحهم جميعا ثواب الفاتحة. بسم الله
الرحمن الرحيم. فاتحة for the souls of all the martyrs. In the name of God, the Merciful, peace be upon the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon the Prophet, and peace be upon all of his family, peace be upon Abul Qasim, peace be upon Imam Hussein, peace be upon all their family, all of the Holy Family, peace be upon all their friends. Peace be upon all of the prophets. My dear brothers and sisters, peace be upon you all. May God give you all his blessings. May God give you all his mercy. I welcome all those who are present, all those representatives, all our brothers and sisters, all of those who have honored us today with their presence and who are taking part with us in honoring the martyrs. And here I'd like to send special gratitude to, of course, send a special salute to the families of the martyrs, their fathers, their mothers, their wives, their children, their daughters, their sons, their brothers and sisters, their relatives, all of those who are really, of course, up to this occasion and who really stand for this occasion, because they are the ones who gave sacrifice. The families of the martyrs did give sacrifices. They are showing perseverance, and they show that whatever be God's judgment, they are satisfied, whatever the judgment of God be, whatever the work of God be. My dear brothers and sisters, every year, and on this specific day, on the 11th of November, we meet to reinvigorate, to celebrate this anniversary begun at the very beginning years of the resistance. This day was called Martyrs' Day. And now, one of the significant issues concerning Martyrs' Day, the uniqueness of Martyrs' Day, is that we stand here in the resistance movement, the people of the resistance, the country of resistance, we all stand here, and every year we renew, although every day we renew in every hour, but on this specific day we renew once again our pride, how proud we are of our martyrs, how much we feel honorable because of the sacrifices of these martyrs. We show that these martyrs really are people of dignity. We ourselves are a people who always remember our martyrs. We remember them in public and in private, in hard times and in good times. And we remember them also in all occasions, not just on the occasions of sadness or on the occasions of happiness. We remember them always in our speeches, in our thinking, in our poetry, in our arts, in our ideology, in our relations with people, in our relations with all people. We always remember our martyrs. We, of course, remember them, and we remember their sacrifices. And we also, via remembering them, By remembering them, we reinvigorate ourselves by learning the lessons of perseverance and determination. We thank their efforts, because whoever does not thank these efforts, it's just as if he does not thank God. And these people, these martyrs, have sacrificed their souls and their blood for our sake, so that we can live a life of dignity and liberty and honor and security and peace without owing it to anyone but them, but the martyrs. My dear brothers and sisters, I think that the resistance movements in the world are very few in number. The resistance movements or the people are very few resistance movements who honor and value their martyrs and deal with their anniversary and commemorate their memory the way we do. And this is no coincidence. This has deep roots in our culture, in our ideology, in our thinking, in our feelings, in our senses, in the history of our nation. And maybe our faith in the martyrs, in the level which our martyrs reach with God, our faith in this and the sanctity of our martyrs, the sacredness of our martyrs, and maybe our annual commemoration of what happened in Karbala, what happened to Imam Hussein. All of this explains why we have a special uniqueness in dealing with our martyrs. This shows our special connection with our martyrs. It's due to our ideology. We have a special attachment, our hearts, with the martyrs, and this is also due to how committed we are to reinvigorating their memory, commemorating their memory. My dear brothers and sisters, today we are commemorating the anniversary of our martyrs, not the dead martyrs, but the live martyrs. And martyrs cannot be dead. Today they are alive. We meet here today and the martyrs are alive just as we speak. And the Holy Quran, when the Holy Quran spoke about the life of the martyrs, the Holy Quran was not speaking about their life on the day of judgment, the day of the last hour, the day where all people will be judged and stand in the hands of God and face their fate and face what their doings have brought about, their results of their doings. At that day, of course, all of the people will be asked about their sins and about what have they've done. So today, everyone is alive. The evil, the martyrs, good people, bad people, the oppressed and the oppressors. We're not speaking about the life of the martyrs on the Day of Judgment. The Holy Quran speaks about their life today. And God, in the verses of the Quran, of course, speaks to those who stood against the Mujahideen, who spoke against the movement of the prophets, those, of course, who were killed. And now many considered the martyrs as dead people, but God said, don't consider those who have been killed in God's cause as dead people, but consider them live, living and, of course, being happy with their God, being happy with what God has given them. This means that these people are now alive with their God. Now they are side by side with their God. Now they are glad with what God has given them. And, of course, they are looking at the situation now. They have their eyes on what is going on. So, of course, God was speaking about the martyrs who are actually alive, and he also said that other martyrs will follow on the same path. Other martyrs or future martyrs will be inspired by the martyrs of today. So many of those people who are living amongst us today in this world are inspired by the martyrs and will follow the same path. God has also said this. people will follow on the same path of the martyrs, and those people shall not fear. So these people are all alive. The martyrs who are already martyrs are alive, and the future martyrs are living now and will follow on the same path because they are inspired by the martyrs. They are striving with all their efforts to become martyrs and to meet their God, to get that great honor. On Martyrs Day, we remember our martyrs. We remember Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, Shaykh Raghib Harb, Imad Mughniyi. We remember all of the commanders. We remember all of those members of the resistance who were martyred. We remember the martyrs and the prince of the martyrs, Ahmad Qasir. We remember all of the mujahideen, all of the martyrs, men, women, children, the elderly, the young, the members of the resistance, and also the members of all the Islamic and national resistance, the martyrs of the Lebanese army, the martyrs of our people, of the Lebanese people who stood firm with perseverance, the Lebanese people who showed determination and who defended their honor, the Lebanese people who took the mujahideen into their hearts. On this day, we remember the origin of this occasion. On the 11th of November in 1982, this was a big occasion. This is what is making us meet here today. This is what began the whole march of the martyrdom. This is what began the victory of the resistance. This is what began the battles and the defeat of the enemy. Why the 11th of November 1982? Why do we focus on the martyrdom of Ahmad Qasir on that day? Because this was the first martyrdom operation, and it reflects the young people, the young members of the resistance, how they fought and sacrificed with their life. This shows people raising their voices, people of resistance raising their voices, calling out for their rights. This laid down the foundations for a long march, a long chain of efforts by the resistance, efforts which show will, efforts which have a target, which have a clear-cut target, efforts which are committed. And because this martyr operation on the 11th of November 1982, this reflected the humanity of the members, of the youngsters of resistance, of the martyrs of resistance. On this age of prime, this young person, Ahmad Qasir, sacrificed his life, and the operation of Ahmad Qasir was the strongest operation in the history of the Arab-Israeli struggle ever since the beginning of this struggle. And it still is today the strongest operation. No operation has come close to the martyrdom operation of Ahmad Qasir. When the martyr Ahmad Qasir, when he bursted into the Israeli military command base and destroyed it, this was the first operation of its kind, and this showed that a bomber whose body was ripped to pieces, who killed and destroyed his enemy who killed his own people, the Lebanese people, and who insulted his sanctities and wanted to decide his own destiny, this reflected and transformed this bomber into an honorable person. This first operation, in the biggest operation in the Arab-Israeli struggle, which was the strongest, as I said, it of course caused a lot of losses for the enemy. The enemy at that time said that 140 Israelis were killed between generals and soldiers, and the government of Begin at that time was forced to go into mourning for 3 days. And so I believe that the operation of the martyr Ahmad Qasir, which was called the Operation Khaybar, has a lot of significance and has a symbolic value. On the 11th of 1982, the foundations were laid for the big victory which Lebanon achieved on the 25th of May 2000 and the big victory in July 2006 during that war. Ahmad Qasir laid the foundations for these victories. So on this day, Martyrs' Day, whether this martyr be a commander or whether he be a secretary general or whether he be a religious leader or whether he be a simple jihadist or just a martyr or one of the mujahideen of the resistance or just someone who has been killed because he stood his ground firm. My dear brothers, whatever he be, on this great occasion, which carries a lot of meanings and understandings and senses and feelings, on this day, I'd like to speak about a number of issues which concern the situation we're living today and which concern us all. And because of the different issues, I'll be brief in each one and I won't go into depth in each of the subjects. First of all, let me speak about the internal situation in Lebanon. Of course, all of these issues are connected with each other, martyrs and resistance, and I'm going to speak on this basis, on the basis of resistance and the martyrs. Now, concerning the internal Lebanese situation, we support the efforts of reconciliation, of bringing calm to the country, and we support all forms of reconciliation in Lebanon, even if this might be a painful step. And we support lending a hand, each of us reaching out to one another as Lebanese, even if each person has his own opinion. So each person is entitled to his own opinion, but in light of this, we still support the reconciliation. We are now on the doors of the elections, and so calm is for the interest of everyone to bring calm to the country. And I said to all of those who I met, I said that, of course, reconciliation is not a decision which someone imposes on another or one team imposes on another. This is in the interest of everyone. Everyone has an interest of having political stability in Lebanon after all what we've been through, especially after the election of a president and the formation of a national unity government, and also after or in light of the upcoming elections, the parliamentary elections next spring. Political stability is not the only thing which can take away the tension on the streets. Political stability can bring about a positive atmosphere in the country, which we need to confront the current challenges we are facing. I think one of the most important conditions of political stability is to stop any provocative steps, because these provocative steps bring about tension. We don't want everyone to go and greet others and to speak highly of others. This is not what we're calling for. And as I said, each person is entitled to criticize the political opinions of another. But if we, of course, stay within certain political and moral boundaries, I think then each team, each camp can express their own opinion and, of course, practice, pursue their policies without insulting any other camp or any other political group. Now, the political stability and the reconciliation helps to hold elections on their specified date next May. Now, we in Hezbollah, we insist on holding the elections on their specified date. And it is very natural. We were the ones, we in the opposition, we called for early parliamentary elections, and it is not logical for anyone to expect us to have a different position now. We are calling for holding the parliamentary elections on their specified date, whatever be the expectations, whatever be the expected results of these elections, whatever be the opinion polls, because not holding the elections on their specified date is something which is very dangerous for Lebanon, whatever be the reasons which could lead to the delaying of the elections. And so there is no reason to, of course, throw accusations amongst ourselves, to accuse each other, for example, of disrupting or delaying the elections. I think it's in everyone's interest to go to the parliamentary elections on their specified date, which is next May. And as I said, concerning the parliamentary elections, I must point out two issues. The first one is that we insist on decreasing the age of those who can elect. We want the age of those who can elect to go down to 18 years old. Remember how old Ahmad Qasir was when he performed this martyr operation, when he renewed Khaybar. He was 19 years old. Ahmad Qasir does not have the right to elect according to the current Lebanese constitution. Those martyrs, those are the ones who, of course, decided Lebanon's destiny in the previous decades. So anyway, to take advantage of the time, I don't need to go very deep into this issue or to prove anything. I just want to say this is a just request. It's the right of the Lebanese who are 18 years old to be partners, to participate in the parliamentary elections, because these youngsters were participants and played a primary role in the Lebanese political life. The youngsters of Lebanon were on the front lines, actually, of the confrontations and the liberation of the country. Some people might say that there are technical reasons which might not allow for those who are of 18 years old to participate in the upcoming elections, but we insist on our MPs to continue their efforts in order to make a constitutional amendment which allows for those of 18 years old to elect, to participate in these elections. But let's assume that the technical reasons are serious reasons. Let the law be amended and let these youngsters reserve their right to participate in the next elections. But any delaying of this amendment now with any logistic excuse, I believe, is just simple delaying without any purpose and cancelling a natural right of the youngsters who have the right to participate in the political life in Lebanon. The second issue concerning the political alliances in the next elections, of course, my colleagues mentioned this, but I also want to mention it. We in Hezbollah, we are committed to our alliances in the opposition. We are totally committed to this, to holding alliances with other members of the opposition. Whatever be said in an attempt to disrupt the process, this is baseless. I want to assure you that we are sticking to our alliances with members of the opposition. Some people are practicing psychological warfare. I assure you that our commitment with our allies in the opposition is an alliance which we shall not back down from. Any reconciliation, any meeting, any frank meeting, any, of course, any communication with any side, not from the opposition, does not mean we'll have alliances with anyone from outside the opposition during the next elections. The last point concerning the internal Lebanese situation, concerning the security situation specifically, we have certain security developments which we've witnessed recently. And one of these developments is, of course, the bombings which targeted the Lebanese army and the civilians in Lebanon, and which also targeted civilians in Syria. And of course, arrests were made and confessions were aired on television, confessions were released. Of course, we, in such issues, we always did and we still do call for serious investigations whereby clear evidence, credible and authentic evidence is showed so that everyone is in the picture. Of course, there is security cooperation now between Lebanon and Syria, and we support this cooperation on all levels. And we encourage this cooperation, this security cooperation between Syria and Lebanon, and we call for promoting this cooperation and not disrupting this cooperation, because this cooperation serves both countries and serves the security of both countries. Today, we don't want to speak preemptively before the end of the investigations, but our position is clear. We want justice to be achieved without any political effect. Let the Lebanese-Syrian cooperation continue to uncover the truth. Let justice be done. And also in Lebanon, whether it be in the arrests which happened or the arrests which could happen in the future, or in the accusations or in the condemnation, let everything be done precisely. And this needs cooperation between all. So we want justice to be served. We want the investigation to continue. And we support Syrian-Lebanese cooperation in the security arena. Let me speak now about the Israeli issue. Concerning the resistance and Israel, it is very clear, my dear brothers and sisters, that the Zionists, and ever since the end of the July 2006 war, are continuing on more than one line, in more than one direction. First of all, they are continuing their military exercises, their military maneuvers. Now, of course, they called these military exercises after all what they suffered in the July 2006 war. Of course, they continued these military exercises ever since the July 2006 war. The Israelis are continuing with their military exercises in the north of occupied Palestine, in the Golan Heights, in occupied Syrian territory. These maneuvers are continuing. And on the Lebanese borders with occupied Palestine, these military exercises are continuing. Now, the latest military exercises were called Crossing Arms, the latest Israeli military exercises. Why do they need Crossing Arms? They need this because they want coordination between all different Israeli weaponry, whether they be infantry weapons or air weapons or intelligence, all the branches of the army coordinated, because the main cause of the loss of the Israelis in the July 2006 war was because their branches did not coordinate, did not cooperate. Now, one of the most simple examples is that the Israeli helicopters had to give assistance to some of those infantry soldiers. Sometimes they used to drop this assistance in the wrong places. There were many big mistakes which were committed in the coordination between the different Israeli military branches. So in this latest maneuvers, they tried this problem. They also speak in the maneuvers which were called Crossing Arms that these military exercises are preparing Israel for a simultaneous war at one time with Lebanon and Syria, both at the same time. And on every occasion, the Israeli officials threaten and make promises during these military exercises. And I'm going to go back to this. Now, the first point, the first main subject is the military exercises and trying to fill in the gaps to address the problems which Israel suffered from in the July 2006 war. The second point is the efforts which are being made to gain intelligence information, whether it be via the Israeli airplanes, which never leave us, and these Israeli airplanes are currently in our airspace, in the airspace of Lebanon right now as we are speaking. We also have the spying networks. They are trying to strengthen these spying networks. They are trying also to increase their connections with spies in Lebanon. And the network which was uncovered here in Lebanon lately is one of the many spying networks which are working in many different places on many different issues. And this network, this latest network which was uncovered, which was arrested, and this is considered a Lebanese national achievement, and we thank the Lebanese intelligence for this achievement. And the Lebanese intelligence is continuing its efforts, is continuing the investigation with this spying network. Actually, many fears are being raised now. Look at the identity of those people who were members of this network. Look at the technology which was used. Look at, of course, how they operated, these spies. So for this reason, this is a very, very dangerous issue, the issue of these spying networks who work for Israel. The third issue, the security efforts in order to assassinate members of the resistance, just like what happened with Imad Mughniyeh. More efforts are continuing to assassinate more members of resistance. Also, efforts are being made to destroy Lebanon inside, to create hatred amongst the Lebanese. And I still insist, after a lot of analysis, and I hope the day comes whereby the truth is uncovered, but let me tell you, Israel stands behind a lot of the assassinations which happened in Lebanon and which aimed to destabilize Lebanon and also to destabilize national unity in Lebanon, because this is one of the main reasons which could lead to the weakness inside Lebanon and hence will allow the enemy to defeat Lebanon. The fourth main point is the psychological war via using different means. They use different means in this psychological war, and many Arab media outlets actually participate in this, contribute to this psychological war. This psychological war which wants to target the confidence of the resistance movements, the self-confidence of these resistance movements, wants to target the people, the supporters of resistance, wants to target the hopes and aspirations and the confidence the people have in the resistance. And we have many examples, but there is no time now to mention these examples. We have a long chain of lies and allegations and many meaningless words which are saying, which are just fabricated phrases. Now, on the other hand, what are we doing in Lebanon? What are the Lebanese doing? Now, if we confront or if we find that our enemy, who still occupies part of our territory, but our enemy, who is, of course, always entering our territory, who is always violating our sovereignty, who is threatening our security, and who, of course, wants to use our water, wants to use all our riches, this enemy, every single day, is renewing this threat, is showing that they do really represent a threat, that the Israelis do represent a threat. What are the Lebanese doing on their part? The Lebanese, the Zionists, of course, are maneuvering, are practicing these military exercises, are trying to impose fear on the Lebanese, are trying to show the Lebanese that they might assault Lebanon one day. But let's now do some self-criticism. But what are the Lebanese doing? Nothing. Nothing. The Lebanese politicians are, of course, just focusing on the political Lebanese problems, have no time for anything else. We are, of course, exhausted in preparing for the upcoming parliamentary elections. Of course, these parliamentary elections are important, yes. But this is not the whole story. Even some Lebanese politicians, of course, are weakening Lebanon. What I'm trying to say is that in confronting such challenges, we always, of course, are in dire need of reaching a conclusion in the national defense strategy. Unfortunately, some accuse Hezbollah and say that Hezbollah wants to delay the discussion of a national defense strategy. We want to decide this issue. We want to end this issue, the national defense strategy, so that we can know, as Lebanese, how can we build our strength to confront the threats. And one of the most important factors, one of the most important elements which could be used to confront the Israeli threats is to reach an end, to conclude this discussion of the national defense strategy. But what is happening on the table of national dialogue and also outside the table of national dialogue, in the previous sessions of national dialogue, the President Michel Suleiman called on Michel Aoun to present a national defense strategy because Michel Aoun was a previous Lebanese military commander. And Michel Aoun, of course, worked very hard, put all his efforts, and based on his academic background, he gave his vision of a national defense strategy. This vision was not discussed on the national on the table of national dialogue. It is discussed on the media, on the podiums, but it's not discussed. It's not discussed actually on the podiums. It maybe is criticized. Certain members who have any problem with this national defense strategy, let them raise their reservations on the national table of dialogue. Let them raise these reservations. Let them speak about this on the table of national dialogue, not on the podiums or on the media outlets. Now, they began to verbally attack the proposal made by Michel Aoun, and sometimes they even, of course, spoke sarcastically about the vision of Michel Aoun for a national defense strategy. We, of course, are concerned with the security, the stability of Lebanon. This is what national defense strategy should be about. But this issue was transformed into an issue for sarcasm. People just started to accuse and criticize this national defense strategy, even started to use this as a political tool for the upcoming elections. This is something which is unacceptable. We should not deal with the national defense strategy in this way. Now, I'd like to focus on a certain point on this occasion of Martyrs Day. What Michel Aoun said concerning the national defense strategy, he spoke about arming the Lebanese army, he spoke about the Air Force, Lebanese Air Force. I heard some comments by the Lebanese finance minister. He said Lebanon does not have enough money and that, of course, creating a Lebanese Air Force needs a lot of financing, which we are incapable of. And he also said that the solution to protect Lebanon is to take protection from the international resolutions. He said the international resolution will protect us. If this is the personal opinion of the finance minister, he's entitled to his own opinion. But I'd like to discuss something, because the finance minister is not on the table of dialogue. But if this represents the point of view of a certain political camp, this is a big problem, because here we face two issues. The first one, whatever be the disagreement on the national defense strategy between the different politicians, there is one common point, my dear brothers and sisters. The common point is the following: the army. There is no disagreement, there are no divisions, that the army play the primary role in defending Lebanon and play the primary role in the national defense strategy. And we must have a strong army. This is something which everyone agrees to. In order to have a strong Lebanese army, we must have, of course, an army which has arms, which has advanced arms, not an army which has just machine guns or some grenades. The first thing which a Lebanese force must have is an air defense system, defense shields, and an air force. Any, of course, Lebanese army which does not have a Lebanese air force and defense, air defense system, is just a force which defends Lebanon internally for certain internal security problems which cannot face outside enemies. The common point which we always speak about is the necessity of arming the Lebanese army. So if from now, from the very beginning, we start saying we don't have enough money, etc., etc., we don't have enough money to arm the Lebanese forces, how can we defend our country? This means we're not serious in the national defense strategy. Now, to arm our Lebanese national army is a priority. The Lebanese government finds money to finance projects here and there, and so this government must give a priority to arming the Lebanese army so that this army can defend Lebanon. And if this policy is something which we disagree upon, the common thing which we agree on in the national defense strategy has been cancelled out. So please be frank with us. Do we agree on the Lebanese army's role or not? Now, the second point, I find it very, very strange. How, from 1948 until today, look at the Palestinian, Lebanese, Syrian experiences, the Arab experience, and today the Iraqi and Afghani and Pakistani and Irani. Look at the experience all these countries have had with international resolutions. Have these international resolutions and decisions, have they protected any people? Have they prevented harm from reaching any of these peoples? Have they served the rights? Have they brought about the rights of any people? No, not at all. After 60 years of very, very bad experiences of our people with the Zionist enemy and with their allies in Washington and outside Washington, and after all of these painful experiences with the International Security Council, after these painful experiences with the international resolutions, if this is not enough to convince some of us that international resolutions do not protect anyone and that the only protection is our own strength, our own army, our own resistance, our own people, if all these experiences for 60 years do not convince certain people, then I wonder, what's the use of holding dialogue on the national table of dialogue? What's the use of sitting down with each other? What's the use of going to the presidential palace and sitting down? My dear brothers and sisters, what we actually need is to discuss in depth the national defense strategy. I agree with the finance minister that defending the country, yes, it does have a lot of financial burdens. This is true, but this is the way we keep our nation alive, by these burdens, by sacrifices, by strong, hard efforts. And for this reason, we called and we still do call for expanding the national table of dialogue, for allowing more participants to take part in the national dialogue so that there could be the largest possible representation, so that we could all take responsibility, all of us in Lebanon, all representatives of Lebanon could take responsibility and take the burden of defending Lebanon. This needs shoulders standing side by side, needs people who stand as mountains. We do not need words which are said on podiums. The martyrs who we meet with today on this occasion, on their occasion, they are the witness. The martyrs are the witness of the big burden which any people must carry, any people who want their capitals, who want their nations to go back to liberty, just as Beirut went back to liberty. Anyone who wants their south, their Bekaa, anyone who wants Saida, who wants Tyre, who wants Nabatiyeh, Jezzin, Marja'iyun, Bint Jbeil, Hasbeya, to be liberated just as these places were liberated, this needs burdens. In this way, our people stay alive. In this way, we protect our countries. In this way, we protect our dignity. But on the other hand, so concerning this issue, I think that will be enough. Concerning expanding the participants of the national dialogue, we do support expanding the participants. It's not about what this side represents or what that side represents. I'm not speaking about this. What I'm speaking about is that we want the participants, we want the number of our participants to be expanded, because the national defense strategy concerns all Lebanese, not just certain groups. The national defense strategy is the most important part of a decision for war and peace. Why do you want certain political groups, certain important political groups, not to participate in the decision of war and peace, while at the same time you always say that decisions of war and peace need a different approach need all participants. So let's close this issue. Let the National Table of Dialogue become a real National Table of Dialogue. Let's end the National Defense Strategy and let's go and implement this National Defense Strategy in the quickest possible time so that we can be strong and be capable of defending our country in light of the regional and international changes which are coming very quickly to our region and to the whole world. But on the other hand, far away from any arguments and far away from any disagreements and far away from any divisions or negative atmosphere, which sometimes makes us feel that certain people are not serious, I assure you that here in Lebanon, just like in the Zionist entity here in Lebanon, we have men who are working day and night ever since the end of the July 2006 war. We are also serious, not just the Israelis. We are a serious resistance who do not waste time. And today in Lebanon, the resistance worked and is still working, is still continuing its efforts day and night so that Lebanon could be strong and so that Lebanon could be capable and so that Lebanon could have the final say. This resistance, which is training and which is preparing and which is learning lessons and which is taking all necessary precautions side by side with the army and the people, this resistance, of course, is fulfilling its mission in the most serious manner. And when I used to say previously, on many different occasions, when I used to, of course, speak about the readiness of resistance, I was not pursuing or making a psychological war. I was serious with what I said when I spoke about the preparations being made by the resistance. Yes, in Lebanon, the resistance today, in the end of year 2008, the resistance is stronger than any time before. The resistance today is more capable than any time before. And the Israeli military branches, which will reach Lebanon, will be cut to pieces, just like the Israelis were cut to pieces in Ansariya. These serious continuing efforts won't stop at all. And all the Lebanese must feel sure, all Lebanese can be sure that there are minds and eyes and hearts and brains which are working day and night, putting all their efforts, as I said, day and night. And they have the support of the majority of the people. And so we will never ignore or take the threat of the enemy lightly. We will never take the preparations being made by the enemy lightly. From the security perspective, we must give all the support for the Lebanese army intelligence and for all the Lebanese intelligence, all different intelligence units, so that we could arrest and uncover more spying agents. Of course, all political Lebanese parties and also the Lebanese political parties with the Palestinian factions and parties in Lebanon must cooperate. Concerning the psychological war, my dear brothers and sisters, of course, let them put their hands on their mouths, let them shut up and tell them, we are staying here, we are staying in our lands and in our territories, and this psychological war won't benefit you. This is what we told the enemy. And our feet stand firm. Our feet stand firm on our territories, on our valleys. We stand firm like the mountains of Lebanon. And we will not blink, we will not shake, and we will not fault. This psychological war won't affect us at all. And we are the ones whom the Israelis even confessed that they waged on us for 33 days. They waged on us. They did this airstrike assaults. They did the air raids. And the number of air raids which Israel waged, of course, in the July 2006 war, was more than Israel, the Israeli airstrikes, during all previous Israeli wars on all Arab nations. Did anyone back down? No, in spite of this. Concerning another subject, concerning dialogue between religions, I'd like to say something concerning the invitation inviting Shimon Peres or Livni or other Zionist politicians to the conference of a dialogue of religions. Of course, the clarification which was made by the Saudi ambassador is fine. Okay, we are comfortable with this clarification. He said that the identity of those who invited the Zionists, he spoke about their identity actually, but what I want to speak about today, I want to speak to all Arab and Islamic nations, all of these nations who want to participate in this conference, to Saudi Arabia, to the Islamic Republic of Iran, to Syria, so that they don't say we're one-sided. I want to mention all countries. To all Arab and Islamic countries, I call on all these countries to put all their efforts to prevent those killers, those racists, those terrorists, those who committed war crimes, to prevent them from participating in a dialogue of religions. What has Shimon Peres, what does he have to do with religion or with a dialogue of religions? He is the one who committed massacres in Palestine and Lebanon. What has Olmert or Livni, what do they have to do with any dialogue of religions, because they participated in the second Qana massacre in Lebanon? Do they have anything to do with religions? Of course not. Israel is a racist, criminal country, terrorist country. The Zionist movement is a racist movement, except if the Arab League and the OIC abandon this description. If anyone today says we want the resistance movement X, for example, to participate in the dialogue of religions, the Americans would stand and say, no, this is a terrorist movement, and the Arab and Islamic countries would respect this American veto. Why don't we respect ourselves, and why don't we put a veto on Israel participating? And why don't we tell the people we are in support of the dialogue of religions? There are many Jews, many Jewish religious people, many Jewish intellectuals in the world who had nothing to do with Zionism, who had nothing to do with the crimes committed by Israel. Let them by all means participate. Now on Martyrs Day, I call on all of the Arab and Islamic countries to work hard, to work vigorously, to prevent Israel from participating in this conference, and to prevent people like Shimon Peres, this killer, this racist, from going on the podium to speak about a dialogue between religions. When, in this era where Al-Quds is being destroyed, when the houses of Palestinians are being destroyed, when the houses of all our Palestinians are being destroyed, and the, of course, Zionists are celebrating this, at the same time where the isolation is being strengthened on Gaza, when Gaza is living in darkness and in hunger, at this time when the assaults are increasing by the Zionist settlers on the Palestinians in the West Bank under the eyes of the Zionist government, at this time, is it acceptable to give the podium for Shimon Peres to speak on the conference of dialogue of religions? Of course not. What we call is for all Muslim and Arab countries to stand against this. The July 2006 war, did it happen 100 years ago? No, it happened 2.5 years ago. Do we forgive them this quickly and welcome them and shake and clap for them and sit down with them underneath the same ceiling under a title which we don't accept them to sit under? We, of course, do not accept them to participate in a conference which carries the title of a dialogue of religions. My dear brothers and sisters, the other point which I want to discuss, and this is something which we must mention, I want to speak about the American elections. And I look at these elections from two angles. The first angle is that the American people themselves, by these elections, because the elections in America are the chance where the Americans, of course, hold their government accountable or hold their party accountable. These people, the American people, held the Bush administration accountable in these elections. And the result of the elections is a confession of the American people that the policies of the Bush administration failed. The economic and foreign policies of the Bush administration failed. This Bush administration brought the American people and other people only wars, from Afghanistan to Iraq, and the hundreds who were killed in Iraq, and the continuation of the killing of the civilians in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, and even lately in Syria, under the title of combating terrorism. And in the July 2006 war, this was an American war. It was an American decision to go take this war in July 2006, and America gave the support for this war and administrated this war. And the Americans called for this war to continue for the 33 days. And it was also an American failure after the war failed. The American people stood and told the whole world. The American people stood and told the whole world that the policy of their administration failed. I don't want to speak about the collapse of the American project in the region or in the world, because some people who say they're open-minded and intellectuals, some people, of course, who have high aspirations and speak against reality, say that we can't speak of the collapse of the Americans, of the American project. But the Americans themselves have said that they have failed in many different parts of the world, and especially in our region. And here I'd like to say that the reason behind this American failure is not because the Americans are incapable or because the Americans don't have capabilities or are not qualified, or that the Americans cannot achieve anything, or not because Americans don't have enough support or the appropriate number of supporters. But the main reason behind the failure of the American policy, the main reason behind the failure of the American policy and the American policies in general, is the people of the region, the resistance movements in the region, and the countries who stood with perseverance, who were targeted by the American policy in the region. This defeat of the American policy, this defeat of America in Lebanon, in between brackets, unfortunately, although we clarify this issue time and again, some in Lebanon still insist and say that Imam Khamenei, that he said that we Iranians will defeat America in Lebanon. He did not say this. What Imam Khamenei said was America will fail and will be defeated in Lebanon. This is what he said. And whoever can defeat anyone in Lebanon is Lebanese people themselves. Whoever can defeat America in Palestine is the Palestinian people themselves, and their resistance and their perseverance and their holding on to their rights. Whoever can defeat the American policy in Afghanistan and Iraq is the Iraqi people and the Afghan people. The difference is that Imam Khomeini was a big leader who believed in the people of the Islamic world. He believed in these people, in the capabilities of these people, the will and determination of these people. And for this reason, he expected that the occupants, the oppressors, would be defeated. And he expected that the oppressed people, who practice resistance would in the end be victorious. This is something which we should thank him for. This is not something which we should condemn him for. Iran never used Lebanon in order to defeat the American policy or the American project. The Lebanese people, of course, do not benefit from the American policy because it's an Israeli policy. And the Lebanese are the ones who defeated the American policy. Will there be other rounds, other battles? This will leave it to the future. From the second angle concerning the American elections is that any normal person, yes, a normal person cannot but be happy with John McCain being defeated and the Republican Party being defeated, because this means a defeat for Bush, a defeat for the gang of Bush. But can we be very hopeful, be very, very hopeful and depend on the change which the president-elect spoke about, Barack Obama? We don't want to give a black picture, we don't want to be too hopeful at the same time. We want to be reasonable. Let's depend on reality. Let's be hesitant. Let's wait and see. It's very difficult, actually, to decide this issue, because America is ruled by institutions, by certain firm strategies. Our Arab world, our third world, our African world might be sympathetic with Obama because of his past or because of his color. But policy and interests is something else, something totally different. I'd like to say that nobody should overreact and be too hopeful. Don't give people too much aspiration so that nobody could be disappointed in the future, so that we don't make a wrong judgment. And I don't want, at the same time, I don't want to speak preemptively, but what I want to say on Martyrs' Day is something which is very, very important, something which is very important, which concerns, of course, all our people. It is not logical to depend on change on the oppressors, on the, of course, arrogant. Don't depend on change there. Don't just depend on change and sit back and say, okay, there is a new situation because this oppressed person has been transformed to a different form, might look at us from a different perspective now because of a change in person. Maybe the oppressed maybe the oppressor will change. Don't behave in this way. This is the way a weak ummah behaves. A weak ummah depends on changes on the outside and sits back relaxed. This is something which we should not do, something which shows that we are weak. A strong, live ummah, a live people, reality, logic, says the following: in light of what is going on all over the world and whatever be the events in the world, we must work hard to be strong. We must be strong in our unity. We must be strong and stand side by side with each other. We must be strong in our education, must be economically strong, must be strong in our social structure. We must be strong in our military strength. We must be strong in building our country. We must be strong in, of course, the ummah standing together. We must be strong so that the world will respect us, so that the oppressor will respect us, so that the oppressor, the tyrant, will stand and know and recognize that we cannot be overcome, we cannot be defeated. Why not? Not because we are weak, but because we are strong. We, of course, protect our country, we protect our nation, and we protect the whole ummah. On Martyrs' Day, the martyrs teach us, my dear brothers and sisters, my dear Lebanese, my dear Arabs, all the people of our region, I'll tell you, you who depend on, or you who are, of course, looking at the changes which are happening in the whole world, do not depend on anything, any changes in the world. These changes won't benefit you if you are weak. The message of the martyrs on this day, the message of the martyrs, the message of their blood and their sacrifices, the guarantee of us staying alive, staying, the message, and of course the guarantee of our liberty, the guarantee of our dignity and honor, is in the blood which is in our veins. Is it the blood of the previous martyrs? Is it the blood of Abbas al-Musawi and Raghib Harb and Bilal Fahas and Imad Mughniyeh and Ahmad Qasir and Sahal al-Mahidli and Dalal al-Mughrabi and Fath al-Shiqaqi and Ahmad Yassin and Abu Ali Mustafa and all of the martyrs? Or is it the blood of those who do not take anything seriously? Is it the blood of the weak? The blood in our veins is what makes our foreheads, of course, to stand proudly and not bow down to anyone, makes us stand on our own two feet. On Martyrs' Day, I, of course, I would like to say to you and to all my brothers and sisters, the destiny of us all, the destinies of all our people, the destiny of all our martyrs, I swear to you, to all my loved ones, we will continue on the same march as the martyrs, on the same path of them as the martyrs. And the blood of you martyrs will be the blood which will flow in our veins, and your blood which was shed, and this is the same blood which is in our veins. And because of this, the ally of Lebanon will be victory, victory, and victory. Peace be upon you all. God bless you all. I thank everyone for taking part. I thank everyone for participating. And I go back and I'd like to greet all of our martyrs because of all what they gave, all that they gave for the sake of the sacrifice. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.